This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome in to the Autzen Audibles podcast, post-game edition. Matt Preem, Eric Scopel, Jared Mack on this show Saturday night. Got some college football on the TV while we're wrapping up the Oregon game. The Ducks destroyed BYU, obliterated BYU, blew out BYU, had a statement game, as Eric put it on his headline, 41-20. And this game, midway through the third quarter, was 38-7 when Oregon, I think maybe a little early, left their foot off the gas and put some backups in, Ty Thompson in at quarterback, which resulted in some poor offensive plays and allowed BYU to make the score look a little bit better than it really was. But overall, guys, this was a game where Jared picked Oregon to lose. Eric and I said Oregon would win by the skin of their teeth, and it wouldn't really have been a shock to either of us, I think, if Oregon lost that game. Mm-hmm. And yet, in a game in which both teams dealt with some injuries, Oregon by far was the better football team. It wasn't, at least in my eyes, it wasn't even close. And I heard a lot of this on social media. I think this shows how good Georgia is, and maybe that Oregon is also a pretty good team.
I think we're feeling a little better about Oregon right now than we did a couple weeks ago, huh, guys?
Just a little. Yeah.
I mean, leaving Atlanta, I think we were all kind of like, I don't know. It's not great. Georgia is really good, and we kind of acknowledged that, but it was kind of hard to really know what the future was going to hold. I think all of us were pretty optimistic. We said, hey, give it six games, get to the bye week, let's make some conclusions then. I think we're kind of in the same spot here where BYU going through some injuries. I think Oregon, clearly the strengths and some of Oregon's strengths work towards BYU's, some of their weaknesses clearly in this game, from my perspective at least. And Oregon kind of did whatever they wanted to do offensively. We can get into some of that later, but I certainly feel like this is an Oregon team that has a lot in front of it. And I'll be curious to see where the voters put this team. That loss at Georgia is hard to overcome, but two consecutive weeks here, the offense has been awesome. I mean, Matt, I know you brought up the stat in press conference to Dan Lanning, but the last 13 drives by the first team offense, last two games here, it's been touchdowns or field goals and almost all touchdowns. I mean, that's just, you can't really ask for much more offensively. It's been fantastic. And I think Bo Nix deserves a lot of credit. We were trying to be pretty cautious last game of, hey, he has a great stat line, but it's Eastern Washington. Let's not draw too much from it. I thought this was one of the better quarterback games Oregon's had since Justin Herbert's gone. I'm not going to try to get too far ahead of myself. I will also say, like, it's probably not setting the bar super high to compare any quarterback to Tyler Shuck and Anthony Brown, especially Tyler Shuck as a first-year starter. Anthony Brown kind of maybe handcuffed by some things, but Nix looked great today. He really did. The decision-making was fantastic. I thought the offense was tailored towards his strengths. Mm-hmm. In terms of, hey, we're not going to force him to do things that he's incapable of doing. And I think he was patient. He made the right calls. He was tremendous with his legs. I loved the way he got after it in the fourth quarter. I don't know if you want it or kind of need to see your quarterback make a play like that, but third and long, he rolls out, could have slid, and said he dives for it, gets wild, pretty good, bounces right back up, is pointing for the first down. I just think I was really impressed by Bo Nix today. And I think the fan base is warming up to Bo Nix. There's a lot of other things to like on offense that we'll talk about as we go. But I think my big takeaway offensively is maybe pump the brakes on the, hey, Bo Nix stinks, Bo Nix is bad. He showed some really impressive things today. And I know the track record with him is the highs, the lows, the good Bo Nix, the bad Bo Nix. Matt, that was your prediction coming in, Matt, yeah. Was we'd see both good and bad. We only saw good Bo Nix basically today. Yeah. I can't think off the top of my head of like a really a poor play he made all game.
No. I really don't think there was. Right, and that might actually be, you know, how Oregon does this and how they limit his opportunities to potentially make a mistake and limiting him to under 20 throws a game. But regardless if that is what they do or is that that's not what they're doing, Nix was phenomenal. The rushing attack was phenomenal, headlined by Marquise or Bucky Irving, as he'd like to be called from now on. Mm-hmm. Bucky Irving and Noah Whittington. I think we'll get into all the injury stuff later. I'll come out first and say, yeah, I did pick BYU to win. So, or, you know, just give me all the stuff in the comment sections. I'm here. I'm ready for it. Mention me on Twitter. I'm here in the comment section. Let's do it. That was a hell of a performance by Oregon. I think it's as simple as that. I think that went about as well as it possibly could have for the Ducks. The fact that they were able to let their foot off the gas in the middle of the third quarter and put Ty mm-hmm. Thompson in up 38-7, that's impressive as heck. And all across the board, I know that there were some defensive lapses that, you know, you probably want to see shored up, you know, particularly from Tri-Quez Bridges on the corner, some of their open field tackling every once in a while. Their defensive line could use a little bit more pressure. Look, they got stops. They stopped BYU multiple times on fourth down. They stopped them multiple times on third down. They limited to 7 points in the first half and 7 points basically up until Ty Thompson came into the game. It was a shellacking. And I understand that BYU, and I'm sure we'll have a couple fans listening to this post-game podcast, I understand that they were without their top two wide receivers, and two of their best defensive linemen. I don't think that would have mattered. And Eric and I talked about this on the way home or on the walk down from Autzen Stadium. It wouldn't have mattered. Oregon just dominated the line of scrimmage. The final drive for Oregon at the end of the half where they went jumbo package and they just said, you know we're running. We know we're running. As Dan Lanning said in his postgame press conference, everybody in the stadium knows we're running. You can't stop us. And I think that was just the epitome of that game. Oregon knew what they were trying to do. They executed it well. And their identity began to show right there. And I'm very impressed with how the Ducks performed today. I did not expect it. I don't know if any of us really expected that type of outcome, but I thought it would be a great barometer of how good this team is. Because like I said, pregame, why I picked BYU, they played Georgia. They got their socks knocked off. They knocked the socks off of Eastern Washington. It's a huge gap in talent for both sides. Just what does it look like? Well, now we have a really good idea of what Oregon could look like and even where they can continue to improve and get better.
Bo was asked if this is his best game he's ever had. And, I mean, just parsing through his career game log on Sports Reference, like, he's certainly had more games where he's thrown for more yards. He's had more games where he's had a higher completion percentage. And remind you, like, he completed 72% of his throws today. He was really good. He had three rushing touchdowns. He didn't run for a lot of yards. I think what was his rushing total? 35 total yards. So, like, 3.9, that's not a lot. But just the opponent that he played – the impacts of the plays that he made, the way he guided the offense, I think you could argue, this might have been his best game he's ever had at the collegiate level from a quarterbacking perspective. And it comes on the heels of, statistically, the highest percentage game he's ever had against Eastern Washington, completing 84% of his passes, throwing five total touchdowns, which is the most he's ever thrown in a football game by two. Mm-hmm. The last couple of games, he has looked really, really good. And I think Jared brought it up. This is how Oregon's going to play and look good. This is, they don't take a lot of shots deep. And when they do, it's maybe half the field or like today's throw to Troy Franklin. I think that was what you wanted to see week one against Georgia. Instead of throwing it to Seven McGee, throw it to a 6'3" guy and ask him in a one-on-one situation to make a play, and Franklin did it. And, you know, that's no fault to Nick's week one against Georgia. He doesn't choose where guys fit in the playbook, but he was really good. And if this is what you're going to get week in and week out the last 2 weeks, obviously there's going to be a dip here, but if this is what you're getting at quarterback, it's good production. It's a lot better than what we've seen. And that goes right into my next little item that I had on my personal notebook here is the offense is night and day from what we've seen the last few seasons. And I wrote down and during the game, I think at like halftime in my notebook saying, I wish we could have seen 2019 Oregon with Justin Herbert run this offense and see what they look like. Because I don't know what it is. I don't know. I mean, I don't feel like this team is uber talented and they've got these NFL dudes all over the place, but it just feels more explosive. It feels more creative. It honestly feels a lot like what Mario Cristobal wanted his offense to be. Power run game. You know, we're going to run it. We're going three tight ends. We're going to get a first down, but then the next play we're going to go tempo and then we're going to air it out and cut you loose here. I mean, this is kind of what I felt like Cristobal was selling us, and we're seeing it with Dillingham's.
I think that's a really good point, Matt, of like Cristobal was always about power football, and there's nothing more power than putting in a sixth offensive lineman and Josh Connerly, three tight ends. You have a fullback. I actually turned at halftime and asked Rob Mosley, who's been on this beat longer than any of us, he covers it from Go Ducks, but when was the last time Oregon ran four consecutive plays under center? And he was like, maybe 2004, 2006, something like that. He's like, you know, pre-Chip Kelly. You have to go way back to see an Oregon offense that used a personnel group like this. And you're right, Matt. This is exactly kind of what Mario was sort of pushing was going to kind of be the identity. And Oregon went out there. I thought that last drive of the first half, that was a really fun and impressive drive. As far, you know, and I don't know, most fans aren't going to get too excited about, you know, lining up with six offensive linemen, have a fullback in the field, you're going I form. It feels like, I don't know, 1990 something in the NFL or even in college, probably more so. And you're just going to run it right down their throat. This is Big Ten football is kind of what it felt like. But it was really effective. And then at the end of the drive, they switched it up and suddenly they've got five wide and Terrence Ferguson's in the end zone for a touchdown. I mean, the way that they kind of switched that up, they took 5.5 minutes off the board. It came on the heels of, shoot, I mean, you kind of think about the way this game went. BYU came down, had a really impressive drive that kind of fell apart at the end there, a couple incompletions. Oregon was really good in coverage, and they settled for a field goal attempt. If that field goal goes through, you know, I'm not going to say this game goes their way by any means, but, I mean, we're talking about it being 17-10 with about 5 minutes to go, and yep. There's the momentum is kind of going BYU's way. Can they get a stop? If they get a stop, you go into half. They're only down 7 points. Instead, 5.5 minutes, that drive I thought was just one of the more impressive offensive drives we've seen from Oregon against a caliber opponent like this in a while. And for them to go the length of field, go for it on twice on fourth down, once in their own 30-yard line. I mean, Jordan James out there running really hard. I mean, we can get into some of the personnel stuff later. I thought that was just a really telling drive. Totally flips the momentum. Oregon goes into half up 24-7 instead. They score their first two drives, and as Matt alluded to earlier, I probably think maybe you wanted Bo to have one more series to guide the offense. If you get up to 41 or 45-7, then you turn it over to Ty. You know, honestly, we're probably nitpicking in terms of if Ty had come down and performed really well and you don't have just the fluky screen pass that goes backwards and loses 20 yards, you're probably just talking completely differently. But at the same time, I agreed with Matt in the moment of like, gosh, like, keep the foot on. This is a good team. I know you're up 31 points, but you know, it's seven minutes to go in the third quarter. It just felt a little premature. But, you know, Lanning said he wanted to show confidence in his quarterback, and he felt like he did that by putting Ty out there. The next thing I did want to talk about is just the running backs. Really surprised by the way this kind of played out. We've been talking about four running backs the last couple of games, five being utilized, but four primarily. We should know Byron Cardwell, not available in this game. We don't have more specifics from that, but Dan said he was injured. He said he wanted to go, but it was kind of a tough call, and you know, Byron wanted to be out there, but the medical staff basically wouldn't clear him, which you feel for Byron. But man, did Bucky Irving make the most of it, and did Noah Whittington. And Jordan James, to me, really was the standout here because he didn't play against Eastern because of an ankle injury. and they really used him as their short yardage back. He picked up 2 fourth down conversions on that final drive of the half. They went right to him. They said, "You're the true freshman. We're going to use you. You're big. You're physical." And he showed it. And one of the plays, you know, the play at the 30-yard line. You go back and watch that one. I think he had to kind of body through a guy, or else that might have been stood up and stopped for what would have been pretty devastating. Talk about flipping the momentum there. Imagine if you give the ball to BYU at your own 30 with about 5 minutes to go, they go down and they score. Suddenly it's a 3-point game going into half, and mm-hmm. it feels totally different. That was a huge play to pick that one up. I thought it was, you know, Bucky was awesome. We've had a lot of people on the message board sort of questioning, why is he getting the starts? Why is he getting the most run? I hope it proved you why today. 14 carries, 97 yards. He had a 39-yard run or 40-yard run, whatever it was, on that first Oregon drive, which was just electric. You know, he's so explosive. I don't know how many tackles he broke in this game. It felt like a ton.
A lot.
I thought he was great, and I thought Whittington ran really hard. I will say, surprised Sean Dollars barely played. I thought that was sort of a little bit surprising to me. He had one rush for 3 yards. That was his only touch after, to me, probably being, I don't want to say the best running back through two games, but he was leading the team in rushing, and he was also, mm-hmm. I think, leading the team in receiving yards. So as for a running back, so this is a guy who'd been really productive. To see him kind of downgraded to the fourth back on the field, and I think a lot of it is circumstantial of, hey, as Matt said, I think Sean Dollars is your third down running back in pass situations. I think a lot of the third downs today were short yardage. And so you brought in the heavy package. You leaned on Jordan James. Mm-hmm. You stuck with the hot hand of Irving, who was really just dynamic every time he had the football. Irving, by the way, had probably like the best 11-yard run I've ever seen, where he gets stopped at the line of scrimmage, wiggles out of 3 arm tackles, cuts back on a guy, and ends up plowing through a couple of players. Like, I thought Irving was awesome today. I think that was a big takeaway for me, was this running back core, sort of the rotation, sort of slimmed down, really only used 3 guys. And the guys they used were all really effective. You know, you can kind of question why Dollars didn't play, and Cardwell not playing kind of impacts some of the rotation, obviously. But I came away being like, man, if Irving is going to be your primary running back the rest of the year, sign me up. I think there's a lot of guys who can help throughout, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's not always the focal back. But against BYU today, man, that guy did everything you needed from him and a little bit more.
It was all impressive. I think you guys have touched on it, so I'll kind of just mop up whatever's left. To Matt's point about the Mario Cristobal, yeah, that's exactly what it looked like on paper in Mario's mind. It just never actually came out onto the field. Power football with alternatives, using tight ends in the red zone. Terrence Ferguson with another 2-touchdown game, 2 receptions, 2 touchdowns. Was this 24 yards? It's 4 touchdowns in the last 2 games on 5 catches. I believe so. I think Eric told me that after the game. And that the jumbo package, I mean, well, most of the package all game, this kind of goes into both of your guys' points, where Oregon really flipped around in what they were playing. They did a lot of 12 personnel, so 2 tight ends on the field, usually Cam McCormick and Terrence Ferguson, until they brought that 3 tight end package. Malik Imadabao had his run. Patrick Herbert had the first catch of his career tonight. Altogether, very impressive game offensively. I like that they were able to go 5 wide at points and even use a running back out there in the slot or something like that. And then bringing in and go, you know, a quarterback sneak. And when multiple quarterback sneaks multiple times under center, they brought back the pistol, which I thought was also strange. But it all worked. I mean, this is just a ground and pound football game. This was, like Dan Lanning said afterwards in his press conference, just him Oregon bringing out what their identity is and being able to ground and pound, but also have Knicks throw a 50-yard almost touchdown to Troy Franklin. Again, just really impressive overall with the offense. With the fact that this is Kenny Dillingham's first year actually calling plays, also extremely impressive. It's the more he calls plays, the more he's going to learn. Again, an extremely young staff. I think that was all a question mark heading into the season, of how they perform in a coaching aspect, not just how the team would perform. They seem to be passing with flying colors right now, especially on offense. I think Dillingham's creativity is very impressive. And the fact that Oregon is able to put up 41 points and probably could have put up more if they kept Knicks in the entire game on a BYU team that just took down Baylor and their explosive and very creative offense as well. Again, just another impressive performance.
Hey, I'm Brett Podolsky, co-founder of The Farmer's Dog. We make fresh food for dogs. We started the company when we saw what a huge difference it made in my own dog, Jada, when she stopped eating ultra-processed kibble and started eating fresh, whole food. The Farmer's Dog food isn't fancy. It's just real food delivered to your door in pre-portioned packs. It's better for them and easier for you.
Get 50% off your first box at thefarmersdog.com/podcast. That's thefarmersdog.com/podcast.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Defensively, 61 total yards rushing for BYU. Jalen Hall did throw 305 yards passing. He was 29 of 41. I don't know the exact numbers statistically, but he definitely got over the 300-yard mark late in the game when BYU was very clearly trying to do some window dressing, trying to throw the ball, score a touchdown, save clock, call timeouts with like 12 seconds to go in the game, 30 seconds to go in the game. Kalani Sitake doing anything he possibly could, and I guess I get it, but
yeah,
to do anything he could to make the score look less than it did. And so some of those yards came at that point in the time of the game for Jalen Hall. So 305 yards there. Quarterback pressures, we brought it up during the game. It's going to get brought up again post-game. It's going to get talked about next week. Oregon didn't, I don't feel like, consistently get pressure. They certainly did at times on Hall, but there were opportunities where they dropped back to pass and Hall just seemed to hold on to the ball. It felt like 4 or 5 seconds, and you know, there wasn't a guy just bearing down on him to get him. Is it nitpicking here? Maybe a little bit, but that's just probably something you want to look at. That being said, when there were opportunities to get off the football field, in particular on some really interesting fourth down calls, Jared and I looked at each other one time and were just like, okay, why would you do that? Why are you going for
the first,
a fourth down?
The first down, it was fourth and
yeah. Seven. Like, why are you doing that? And credit to Oregon's defense, they got off the field and they made some of those big fourth down tackles.
I think to the first part, the rush defense. I went on a couple of radio spots. I think we talked about here about how even against Georgia, Georgia really didn't run at the teeth of this Oregon defense. And we should know, Justin Flo didn't play in this game. I think that was a surprise. We thought on Tuesday, he missed Tuesday's practice. Wednesday, he was back. He dressed for the game, by the way, and he went through warm-ups. So we kind of thought, okay, looks like he's going to play. The TV broadcast said he wasn't available. He didn't play at all. To be able to limit an opposing rush offense to 61 yards on 24 carries, I think was the final. Is really, really impressive. And I also say that because guess what? Noah Sewell, pretty quiet again, two tackles. They ran a lot of, not a lot, because they only had 24 rush plays, but they run to the middle of the field and it wasn't him necessarily making plays. I was really impressed by the replacements in the inside spots. Jeffrey Bassa, I thought, played pretty well. Jackson LeDuc and Keith Brown both had four tackles and were both around the football a lot. I thought they both played really, really well, but player of the game for me defensively was Brennan Dorlus. Seven tackles, 1.5 tackles for loss. Really close to getting my 2 tackles for loss prediction. Really close, Brandon. Just one more. He had a sack, but he also blew up. Did they go for a 4th-and-4 3 times? Is that right?
3 times, yeah. He got one of them, and DJ Johnson stopped Jaren Hall on a
scramble.
Not a tackle for loss, but yeah.
DJ got him on a scramble, but Brandon had one where he just blew up. I think it was Christopher Brooks for a loss on a 4th-and-1 or 4th-and-2 short yardage. I thought Dorless was a difference maker. You needed him to be one. He's been, like I said kind of earlier in our prediction show on Friday, you kind of were waiting for it just because he's been such a big part of kind of the fall camp hype machine was really backed up. Or, he was kind of leading the charge there of kind of one of the guys that you expected to be really a big contributor, and he hadn't done a whole lot. And I thought he was fantastic. I thought DJ Johnson was really, really good. That front seven in general played well. Mace Funa had some rough moments early on out in coverage, out in space. He also had a couple of plays that were really big where he made, I don't think it was his best game, but wanted to kind of applaud the fact that there are a couple of times out in space he's being asked to play a lot in coverage where he actually was up for the challenge. So I thought defensively against the run they were great. I agree with Matt. You'd probably like to see a little bit more pressure off of on Jaren Hall or Jaren Hall. He throws it 41 times. He's sacked once. He's hurried one other time. A lot of it was pretty clean pockets. A lot of it was him throwing it on the run and making good plays. I think he's a really good quarterback and probably one of the better guys Oregon will face this year. Matt mentioned his nitpick was lack of a pass rush. I think the thing that concerns me right now is who's your number 2 corner. I think that's a pretty big concern. Christian Gonzalez, by the way, was awesome in this game.
Really good.
They started. It looked like to me, and again, we'll have to watch it again. It looked like to me they started playing, like a boundary and a field corner, and basically having, Gonzalez playing one side of the field and Bridges on the other. And that didn't work out great because Bridges got beat pretty good. And it seemed like at some point an adjustment was made. And I could be wrong on this. I just saw it happen a couple times where he just basically followed Chase Roberts around the field. Roberts had like a 35-yard catch in the first play of scrimmage. He had another one that was downfield for another first down on Bridges. And then it seemed like they just put Gonzalez on him. He just shut him down. He ends up with 3 catches for 60 yards, was a non-factor after that first half. Probably the first quarter. I don't know when else he had his receptions, but I think Gonzalez is clearly a really, really top tier corner. We know that going into the season. I'd heard from a couple people, there's an argument he's your best defensive player pound for pound. If you were to do some sort of team, fantasy draft, you'd want to have Gonzalez among the first group of picks because he's that good. Those are the kind of things that I was hearing. He proved it today. He'd been a little quiet maybe in the first couple of games against Georgia. I know he got beat for a touchdown, got beat a couple other times on key spots, but I thought he was tremendous. I am now concerned about the other corner spot. I don't think Triquez has played very well. Jaleel Florence played a lot in the second half, gave up at least one tough play where he didn't play very good coverage. I thought Dante Manning was actually solid when he was out there, but they're clearly working through who the second guy is because they rotated quite a bit in the second half between Florence and Manning. I don't think Bridges played a whole lot after half.
No, he didn't. And
go ahead. I'll pass the torch to you because that was kind of where I was going to leave it.
Yeah, I think that's the main concern too. Bridges didn't play a lot in that second half, and we didn't ask after the game if it was due to injury. I don't think it was. I think he came on at points. He was on the sideline. He was, rotating around with the other defensive players. I think that is a significant concern because, Eric, like we were talking when we were leaving the stadium, hypothetically, if BYU had Puka Nacua and Gunnar Romney, Christian Gonzalez is there to lock one of those guys down, but one of those two are talented enough to really break free, and we saw that with Chase Roberts against Bridges for the first half, and his ability to be shut down by Gonzalez is really nice to have for Oregon. But again, you'd prefer to have another guy, and that guy could have been DJ James, or it could still be somebody that's on the roster who can and needs to and will step up. Pass rushing, again, I'm going to take it with a grain of salt because BYU, they tried to attack on the perimeter just like everybody else Oregon has played this year. That's been the model, and Oregon has gotten significantly better against Eastern Washington, and then they were a lot better today. I think their tackling still has room for improvement, obviously, but a lot of those, you know, yards after catch that happened, a lot of that was with the second and third team defense in. I think the first team defense did an excellent job of swarming tackles, getting multiple players on the ball. Bennett Williams had a great game in that retrospect in attacking whoever had the ball. He talked about it later and said that, you know, tackling is going to ultimately become the identity of this defense, and it's really important for them. I was also looking at some of the advanced offensive statistics, and BYU was 16 of 19 on short passing. So if they were going to take a pass, that's almost, you know, that's nearly half of Jaren Hall's attempted passes, or 19 of them are short, which is five and under. 5 of 10 downfield, which is 15 or more. So I think that's a pretty good barometer of how teams are attacking Oregon. It's a lot along the perimeter. They're going to try to force them to make tackles, and Oregon did it today. And that came up in a bunch of huge moments where it could be a second and eight, and it's a swing pass, and then they tackle him for 2 yards, and it's a third and six instead of tackling for 6 yards, and it's a third and two. So, defensively, I thought Oregon was good. I thought they did absolutely enough to stopped BYU on all of these short downage spots. They had their guys step up in big moments like DJ Johnson and Brandon Dorlis. The second corner position is very worrisome. I think that's going to be the storyline coming out of this game, is, you know, who's going to line up opposite of Christian Gonzalez come next Saturday.
It's the only negative one that'll come out of it, or one of the
three. Yeah. Oh, 100%. There's going to be a lot of stuff to come out. Yeah, and almost all of them are positive. Just the second cornerback at points. Granted, Oregon only allowed 20 points, and outside of the interception that deflected off of Dante Thornton's hand, that gave him a really short field. I think that's the only negative that I can really come away with looking as something that could be potentially, you know, destructive down the line.
I thought it was interesting. No Justin Flo. We saw some, you know, Noah Sewell's placements on the field. The first 3 weeks of the season have been interesting. And then after the game, we get a comment. And the reason I bring up those two guys is those are probably the two most physical players that Oregon has on the team. I think you throw in Bennett Williams, probably Dorlis and Jamal Hill.
DJ Johnson, maybe DJ is in there.
And Lanning brings up the fact that he's been asked a couple times, what does he want this identity? Jared talked a little bit about it on the site in his story, but he's asked, like, what's the identity? And he never really gives, like, a schematic answer, but it's, we want basically, I'm paraphrasing, we basically want teams to be sore, hurt, in not a non-injury way. And they don't want to play us again when they come off the football field. And Bennett said that that's what happened today. Terrence Ferguson said that's what happened today. And I don't know what it was, but I just really loved that answer. And it goes back to kind of what I said about Mario Cristobal and the offense. Like, we're seeing kind of, I think, the vision that Mario Cristobal had but couldn't execute, being executed and being deployed in the right ways, because there were some hard hits by the defense.
Yeah.
There were some really good, they've gotten night and day better at tackling. I think we've heard the last 2 weeks practice has been hard after Georgia, and it just feels like this team, Bennett talked about it, they're starting to buy into the philosophy, the scheme, the game plan, the pillars that this program has, and they're forming this identity of just physical football. And I understand BYU had a real physical game last week against Baylor. Mm-hmm. But it was very clear Oregon's physicality could not be matched by BYU on either side of the football. And I think that maybe is one of the most impressive things to come out of this game, just considering what we thought going in.
So I was sick last week. So I want you guys to confirm, or I guess the lead up to Easter Wash. I want you guys to confirm this. Did they go fully padded on the Tuesday, Wednesdays we watched that week?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. That's been. I don't know. Obviously, we're not watching Monday. We're not watching Thursday. We're not watching Friday. But Tuesday, Wednesday, they were fully padded. That means they're really getting after it. And I put that to say because I think the lead up before Georgia, I think they were padded in one, but might not have been either of the days. It might have been Spider Boat days. Now,
I know the answer to both of these.
Go ahead.
They went light almost every day leading up to Georgia, and then after Georgia, they have gone almost padded exclusively.
Okay.
Yeah, every practice.
That was the point I was going to try to draw, was that I think the tackling thing, Matt, is such a good point. They've changed what they're doing from a week-to-week perspective in terms of how they're practicing. And, you know, there are potential drawbacks of that. Oregon's had some pretty – and we'll get to it in a moment, some of the dings, because there's some guys who are pretty key who aren't able to play right now, and some of them didn't seem to be injured in the game, right? So in games. So, like, there are obviously these physical practices – they have some drawbacks, which is you might have a little higher percentage of guys getting injured, or a little probability, I should say. The positive is these guys look so – you're right. They look so much better in terms of finishing plays and tackling plays. And I think it's been really one of the more impressive things is it was just pretty dang embarrassing at times against Georgia, some of the misses. I can't think of a lot of misses the last two games with the top unit. The backup guys get out there, your expectations are a little different, especially because both Eastern and BYU primarily played their first team offenses the whole way, just because the game was lopsided. You want to get some momentum, as Matt said, create some window dressing, finish the game feeling a little good about yourself. I just thought the top guys, when they were out there, they both almost exclusively made the plays that they needed to play. Jaren Hall had a couple decent plays scrambling. But yep. I think when he was in the open field and Oregon had a shot at him, they finished it. They took him down. They made it difficult for him. They made it not fun to try to run the football. I think he kind of scared, you know, shied away a little bit from that over the time. So I'm in total agreement there. And then just the other thing I wanted to kind of bring up before we jump into injuries was I did ask Marcus Harper, you know, do you have a name for this jumbo package? And he said he doesn't, and he kind of thought for a second, but he said, if I were to call it something, I'd call it the big boy package. I don't know if that'll stick. I don't know. We'll see. I wish we talked to Kenny Dillingham. Maybe we'll ask Dan about it on Monday. But I just really like, as we've talked about a couple times, what that provides the offense, which is we're just going to get massive on the field. We're going to use a tight end as a fullback. We're going to use two more tight ends. We're going to use an offensive tackle as a tight end, and we're just going to come out there and smash you. And Josh Connerly was pretty crucial on some of those plays. You know, you've got two true freshmen in Connerly and Jordan James who are big parts of that package, and I loved it. So I'm a big fan of that. I don't know, Jared, do you want to run through some injury stuff? Because I think we're kind of wrapping up.
Yeah, I was just going to quickly do that. Justin Flo, as we mentioned, went to practice on Wednesday, was suited up today, but didn't push the limits. Same with Byron Cardwell. We saw him at practice on Wednesday. He looked fine. Nothing obvious about it. Stephen Jones was out today. He was seen in a boot on his left leg and using a scooter to get around. Bram Walden and Michael Wooten did not dress. Ryan Walk was in and out of the lineup. He started the game at right guard and then came out. I think it was in the second quarter he came out, went to the injury temp, didn't play for at least two series, then came back in the second half, played a good bit.
He also went to the locker room briefly, it looked like, right?
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He went briefly back to the locker room, but came back and was okay. Played a good bit actually in the second half. I think they're just getting him reps because he didn't play all of last week. Seven McGee, you know, he wasn't out there on the field too often. He was out there on the field, but didn't get into action too often. But it was good to see him back in general. I'm trying to think if there's another major guy that we're missing. I think that should be about it. I was just going through the depth chart. Andrew Boyle was back on kickoffs. He took a majority of them. Alex Bales did take one, which was interesting, but I think that might be a question we can ask Dan if we run out of other stuff to say.
yeah, it might be down the list.
Yeah, Suava Podi and Mikael Afaye say we're on the bench, as was Popo Amavai. Looked to be in good spirits. I think that's about it for the injury issue. So, again, like Eric was mentioning, going into full tackle for a majority of the practice days could result in a lot of dings, but it seems that Oregon's doing well on the injury front, you know, knock on wood, but overall that just, you know, a couple guys have been out here and there, but players like LeDuc and Jeffrey Bosa were able to step up a lot for Justin Flo, which helps. So it'll be, we'll keep track of that during the week and when we're able to see practice as well. But as of, I don't think any Oregon players were injured during the game, except for Wack, who eventually came back into the game. I don't remember there. I only remember there being one injury timeout in general. So it was a very clean game in terms of an injury perspective from both sides. So another good thing for Oregon moving forward is that they continue to look healthy.
We're going to wrap this up. I don't know if you guys want to comment on any of this. If not, it's totally fine. But Oregon heads into Pac-12 play now. They're 2-1, kind of the scenario most likely to play out. And just the overall perspective of the league, I think, is changing this week. Washington's mm-hmm. currently beating up on Michigan State. Oregon State's going to go 3-0. Utah and San Diego State, as of this podcast, are kicking off. So there's a lot to learn there. Fresno State, too. They play USC. But Minnesota destroys Colorado. Colorado's terrible. And it gets to this point. Washington State, 38-7 over Colorado State. I know the Rams are 0-3 on the season, but this is a game that 3 months ago, 6 months ago, when Eric's doing his pregame, his preseason picks, we're talking about trap games. This is no longer going to be a trap game. I would think, I would hope, considering they've got a win over Wisconsin to their name, the Cougars are ranked. This will be a 1 o'clock kickoff on Fox. The nation will be watching. Pullman will be buzzing. This is going to be a huge game, and Oregon's schedule was supposed to start getting lighter, and it's feeling like it's getting harder, and it's going to be interesting to see how Oregon kind of handles what BYU just went through. Huge win at home over a ranked opponent. Mm-hmm. Go on the road to play a team that's below them. How does Oregon respond? This is going to be a big, big football game.
I'm excited. You know, games in Pullman are tough, though. You know, you look back and historically, I didn't make the trip in 2020. Matt, you did. That was the last one before they kind of stopped. I think we were told
that was weird.
We were told not to travel after, but that was a no fans in the stands game. I didn't go to that one. The game in 2018 was a rude awakening for the last staff, by the way. And I kind of wonder, you know, will there be some players on this team that kind of say, hey, because last year, I kind of just remember last time, not that they said anything overtly, but it kind of felt like staff, Oregon had just beaten, similar circumstances, just beaten Washington, who was top 10 in the country, at home, emotional game, really big. Everybody's feeling good about it. They go to Pullman. It just kind of felt like Oregon fans and maybe the team overlooked a little bit what that experience was going to be like. And it was like, holy cow, it's 24-0 like that. And Pullman was rocking, and Oregon was not very competitive in that game. And Washington State ended up having a really good season. I think the Cougars are tough. I think the Cougars have proven they should be ranked like Matt. I'm looking at last week in terms of votes. They got 30 votes this last week, which puts them approximately like 33rd, 34th or something like that in the AP poll. I think there's a pretty good chance that they are right on that back end. Talking of polls here, not to change the subject too much, guys, but just kind of curious, like polling you guys, where should Oregon be right now? They just beat the number 12 team in the country. It was a 21-point game. It was could have been more. Like, you know, I know I'm kind of changing the topics here a little bit, but it just kind of dawned on me looking at the polls there that, like, what's the ceiling, Matt, do you think, for Oregon this week in the polls? Like, could they get up to the top 15, 16 range, or what feels right for the Ducks?
I'm counting the teams right now that have lost ahead of them.
Okay.
And I see three. I'm trying to find another one if there is any. There's three have lost. You're going to see potentially Florida lose to South Florida. We'll see what happens there. They're up three with 5 minutes to go in the game. Texas is struggling with UT San Antonio.
I saw that.
Miami's down 7 to Texas A&M. I think like 15, 16, 17, kind of that three range feels right. Like,
yeah.
I don't think they're in the top 15. I think they get back to where they were at preseason, because 49-3 still happened. I think mid teens, 15 to 17 is kind of like the spot where I think they should land, because 49-3 happened, but today also happened, and BYU's legit, and they're gonna win 9 to 11 games this season for BYU. And to do what they did to make BYU look like a nobody is worth a lot of points in my book. They earned a lot of the credit lost against BYU back. Not all of it, but a good chunk of it.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's about it. I could see them, I don't know, maybe jump into 14, but I think 15 is about the ceiling for them. But like Matt said, they definitely have gained a lot of respect even after the Georgia loss, mostly because – well, Georgia allowed their first touchdown of the season today, and it's week 3, so that's pretty good for them. With 53 seconds left in the fourth quarter to South Carolina, an SEC program, albeit whatever you want to take of South Carolina. But Oregon did really well today. This is a BYU team that's number 12 in the country that just beat, at the time, number 8 Baylor, another very good program led by Dave Aranda. So I think that they're going to get a lot of credit. I think they're probably going to – again, I think the ceiling is – 14, but I think that 15 to 17 range feels more likely. We'll see how the dominoes fall for the rest of the night in terms of who loses. But yeah, 14 to 17, I would say, I think is the final.
Let me give you a really hopeful thing to finish. This has been a really upbeat podcast, as it should be. Oregon played great today. If Oregon wins in Pullman, putting the cart before the horse, I understand that. Probably not good podcasting, probably jinxing them. Let's say that happens, though. And let's say Washington State, like we said, sneaks into the back of the top 25. That's going to be 2 straight ranked wins.
Yep.
And let's say Oregon isn't that 14 to 18, maybe 19 is kind of maybe a 14 to 19 range, I think.
Yep.
They might get kind of close to being where they started the season, which I think if you were to tell us in Atlanta on the 3rd of September, I think that's the day of the game.
Yes.
That Oregon by the start of October would be kind of back in the same range of where they started this season, I think we'd all be like, that's absurd. There's no way.
Yeah.
And again, there's a lot of games to be played. There's actually 2 more this month, I think, right?
Stanford's October 1st.
Okay, my fault. But still, 1 more this month. I'm just saying, like, I think that would be a really impressive response to the end of this month if they can somehow get back. And I know the rankings don't really mean a lot this time of year, but just to change the perception from being like, everyone's like, this team is terrible, they're not very good, write them off, the Pac-12's dead, to, hey, by the end of the month, maybe they are like the 13th or 14th best team or the 12th best team, right back where they were kind of start of the year. I don't know. Just something I was thinking about.
Yeah, and I think if somebody were to tell us that, we would have replied, well, they must have blown out BYU, or else there's no other way they would have got there. So that's exactly the performance Oregon needed looking down that idea that you have, that's exactly the performance that they needed to get, potentially back to that level after a couple weeks. But that's why you play the games.
Exactly right. It's why you play the games and why you don't give up on a season after the first week.
After the first quarter.
I don't think any of us were expecting this outcome, the first quarter of Georgia, week 1. And that's why you continue to play, why you continue to follow, why you continue to cover. We'll do it all on DuckTerritory.com. Throughout the week coming up as we all head to Washington State in Pullman to catch up on that football game, that big football game, Pac-12 opener for the Oregon Ducks. But until then, you've been listening to the Autzen Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.
Peace.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.